is, will come in and augment that as and when they think fit. But Brian, I think we'll hand over to you. You've asked the questions. Why don't you take us through the questions? And if you want to change the priority, if there's somebody you want to get through first because of the time limits, by all means, feel free to change the order. We're flexible. We can cope. Brian.
Thank you very much, Peter, and thank you to the board. Thank you very much for preparing in advance. We only have an hour and a half, so I think it would probably be good for review team members if there are particular questions you'd like the board members to focus on in providing responses. Let's identify those as we go along to best manage our time and prioritize. With that, just to save time, if everybody on the review team would please stand up and identify ourselves to the board. Stand up. Yes.
You could have said that earlier.
Sorry, Cheryl. Thank you. So, moving right along, I guess, Peter, while we're looking at the list of questions and trying to prioritize for you, if you want to start with question number one and whoever's got a response for that.
All right. Rita. Rita begged and pleaded to be allowed to answer this question and to go first. So, yes, Rita got the short. Rita.
Thanks. Okay, so the way we did this, just for the review team's benefit, is the board had a conversation yesterday about these questions that you provided to us and came up with these answers. So given our time, I'm not going to necessarily read verbatim here, but I'll try to give you a summary. So since the AOC was signed, there haven't been any changes to the board selection process. But the change to the board selection process doesn't necessarily equate with improvements in governance, which I think have been ongoing. One of the big changes is that the board has approved the inclusion of a voting member selected by the at-large community. And at this time, the work is ongoing to seat the new seat 15 by the 2010 annual general meeting in Cartagena. What's also been going on is the Board Governance Committee, in conjunction with the other committees of the board, has done a number of things to improve the way those committees work. The first is that there's been a formal identification of skill sets that the committee chairs have worked and said, this is the kind of skill set that we need in our committee to have it function more efficiently. And this has now been a formalized process. And the intention of this process is to provide the chair of the board and chairs of each of the committees with this information that's going to be discussed with the nominating committee so that we can give input to the nominating committee on their selection of candidates. I know there's been a little bit of a nebulous communication between the board and the NomCom, and obviously the board wants to stay distinct and distant from that process, but we thought it would be helpful, since we've gotten requests from the NomCom in the past, to identify some skill sets that we think might be helpful to create a more robust selection process there. And one other thing that we wanted to mention in this regard was that in 2008, the Boston Consulting Group did a report which reviewed the board. And the report was issued in 2008, and the board convened a working group to review the recommendations. And there are a number of recommendations, I believe the report's been posted, that working group made regarding enhancing the efficiency and professionalism of the board. Many of those have been implemented, and there were things like enhancing performance, enhancing accountability, enhancing really the way the board functions. I think that it's been a process of communication too amongst the board, and I think this board is actually quite strong in doing things like identifying skill sets and focusing on reviewing materials, being prepared for board meetings and having robust discussions so we can be accountable to the community, but also communicate better to the community the basis for a lot of our discussions. So I think that's been going very well, and we continue to do follow-up work that's come out of that Boston Consulting Group as we continue to try to iterate the board to being more functional and more efficient.
Thanks, Rita. Brian, I wonder if, as a matter of form, the next thing might be to allow the review team to ask questions of, if you like, the answer we've prepared. And then ask if other board members want to augment. So, in other words, would you over to you?
Absolutely, agreed. Let's do follow up questions for each item. Looking quickly at the list of questions, I think we probably want to focus on the ones related to the board. So, the first in the series. Let's walk through those. But in terms of questions, one of the things that has been brought to the review team's attention is that in terms of going into board meetings and the documentation that is provided to the board and the process of the board being informed of issues leading up to decisions, is that sometimes that process of providing documents to the board can be quite stiff in terms of the volume of documentation, the timing of receipt of documentation, and the ability of individual board members to absorb the information as they lead up to a vote or decision. Have you seen any areas of improvement? Do you see that as being an area of issue?
I have, and I think that's another question that we've already answered, which I think Bruce is going to talk to, but very briefly, it has quite a bit. I think this is something that when I came on the board in 2005 was subpar, and the board has been quite direct under the help of the chair to request from staff, in fact, you know, really almost demand that we get papers in enough time to not be reading them the night before. The format of the reports has also improved quite substantially. We now have executive summaries with then follow-on information behind, so the board can dive into the details if it wants, but it has very clear positions of each member, you know, constituents in the community that it sets forth in the executive summary, with then occasionally a recommendation from staff. So you'll hear more about this also in one of the other questions that I think Bruce is going to address.
Very good. Other questions from the review team for Rita? Shall we move on to number two?
Unless any board member wants to add something to that, knowing that we've actually got quite a lot more prepared material in relation to this topic. Okay, let's move to two.
Number two, please.
Can I just ask that those be a bit enlarged? I'm finding I've got them here, but it'd be quite nice. Who's running the screen? Olaf, could you just quintuple the font or something for people...
And also change the font, probably. It's not a particularly good font for enlarging.
Yes, thanks.
Go to something like Helvetica and then enlarge it.
Anyway, I know that it's about board function and how the functions may have changed, and Dennis Jennings, who's the chair of the Board Governance Committee, has volunteered to deal with this one. Dennis, do you want to take us through the answers?
Indeed, thank you. The question for those who can't read it there is, have any significant changes in the way in which the board function's been implemented, or are any such changes being planned? Following on from what Rita has said about the Board Review Working Group, there have been significant, as Rita has indicated, improvements in the way the Board works. The first thing that came out of that was the recommendation to consolidate the Conflicts and Reconsiderations Committees, and they've been consolidated into the Board Governance Committee. There's been a tidy up and a better use of resources. That was done last year. And one of the big things that's been done by Peter is to reduce the number of board meetings in each year and to have longer and more meaningful meetings. So those are the way the board functions has been changed at that level. We've also, in the Board Governance Committee, continued the focus on increasing board efficiency and improving the board processes. One thing we did was to reduce the number of committee assignments per member, so that each member can spend more time on the committees and give more attention to it and participate more actively. The introduction of new committees under Peter's leadership, the smaller size and more focused committees allows the board to send more routine work to the committees to be dealt with and get advice from the committees, and that has helped the board to get more routine work done appropriately. As a result of that, one of the introductions has been the introduction first at the board of a consent agenda, so that stuff that's been done that is non-controversial, that has been considered by committees, can be put on a consent agenda and just dealt with, approved, unless any board member wants to say, look, I don't agree, let's take that off the consent agenda, I want to talk about it. And most recently, we've started to use the consent agenda in the committees, because there's some stuff that's been gone through, has been dealt with, and we can easily put that on a consent agenda, and the committee doesn't have to waste time on stuff that we've already discussed, that's been worked through, and we just need to approve. We've added two retreats, annual retreats, sometimes coupled with induction and training opportunities. So we've focused on higher quality meetings, and I think the discussions have indicated that there's a more active board with better contributions because of of that, particularly the retreats. Rita's mentioned the improvement in the briefing materials, more quality papers, and I think we have an increasingly well-prepared board as a result of that, and you'll hear more about the detailed changes later on. And I suppose the big change is the committees, using the committees for getting routine work done rather than at the full board level. So those are some of the aspects of the way the board functions has been changed, I think effectively.
And you may have indicated this, but anything specifically in the planning?
Planning on
being planned.
My mind has gone blank. Let me think about that, and I'll come back.
Certainly. Any questions from the review team? Follow up. Other board member comments?
There's increasingly a discussion at among a number of board members about the role and function of the board, and you will have seen the board more actively push stuff back to the policy development processes rather than become the policy development by default. And I think in the future you'll see, it's not done, it's something we're working on, a focus more on the real board role, which is strategy, governance, and oversight. And trying to get out of active participation in the details, and more in overseeing that things are done properly, overseeing that the governance is done and done properly, and making sure there are strategies for the corporation. That is an evolving thing, and I think over the next couple of years a lot of work will be done on that to get the board at the oversight level, so that when someone says, who is overseeing ICANN, the credible response is the board of ICANN. Now I'm speaking my personal goal, if I have an opportunity to contribute, will be that.
Excellent. I've got speaking order started with Kateem and then Ram. Kateem?
Thanks, Peter. Good afternoon, everybody. I was just actually going to respond to the question regarding the planning issues along the lines of what Dennis said. But just to add a little bit more to what he said, the board has been lately very involved in the strategic planning process of ICANN. And this, in my opinion, has helped a lot, because it has really not only helped the organization focus in its activities, but it's also helped the board internalize the very missions and objectives of the organization itself. It's also helped us engage more significantly with the community, and of course thereby in the process help improve the activities and implementation of the budget itself, of the strategic plan itself of ICANN. So it's, I think, on the whole really helped improve the implementation process of the organization.
Thanks, Kateem. Ram.
Just to add, in terms of board's improvement in effectiveness, there's been an assessment of the chair's performance last year. We had that and discussed that in a retreat. We've done a board's assessment, and there's a plan to do board member self-assessment too, going forward.
Thanks, Ram. Moving on.
Fabio.
Brian, I have a question of organization. In looking at our admittedly long list of questions, we have a crucial set of questions that are relevant to the question of the board performance, which are questions 11, 12, and 13. I'm a bit worried that since we're still at question 2, if we continue this pace, there's no chance. Would it be possible perhaps to take those three questions, because they seem to me to constitute the background of anything else that we will be discussing about the performance of the board?
Yes, absolutely, Fabio, and thank you for helping to prioritize. If you don't mind, I think we should do number 3, which has to do with briefing materials of the board. We've touched on that already, but let's examine that.
I'd like to go through 6 before we jump.
3, 6?
3, 4, 5, and 6.
All the way through 6? Okay. And then 11, 12, and 13, you said, Fabio?
Yes.
Okay, let's proceed accordingly. Thank you.
And Bruce Tonkin is delegated to deal with briefing materials that come to the board. Bruce.
Okay, let me brief you on the briefing materials. the
Bruce, sorry, can I just interrupt? The review team has actually seen a board book.
Oh, good. That helps that I don't have to try and explain.
Don't have to explain all of that. When the at the first face-to-face meeting in Marina Del Rey, the staff showed the team what a briefing book looks like.
Right. Thanks. Okay. Let me just summarise that really quickly, but then I want to go into an example, and I think I'll use the example of EOI because that really just explains the process perhaps from start to end in a six-month period, which I think is useful. So just for a reminder for those that have seen the board book, typically what happens 7 days before a board meeting, when the agenda gets published, we get a board book published. That's structured so that under each agenda item there is a draft resolution. Then there's typically a 2 or 3 page executive summary, and then there might be an annex that might be of the order of 20, sometimes up to 100 pages, depending on the issue. That goes into a lot of detail and is usually referencing publicly available material that's already on the ICANN website. I think quite a few of the matters we're starting to standardise now. So for CCTLD delegations, we now pretty much have a standard format of the executive summary that has a set of criteria that has been evaluated for a CCTLD delegation, using the example particularly around the IDN CCTLDs. So that's a standard format, so we can very quickly scan a checklist to see that the key items have been covered off. So I think that's been an improvement. If I take the EOI as a particular example and how we as a board manage that with the public process, it started with an idea fairly late last year, I think around October, at one of the ICANN meetings. There was a suggestion from members of the community to have an expression of interest process. We asked the staff to sort of put forward what a base proposal might look like. And then we put that out for public comment. So we asked the staff to prepare a document on that. They discussed that with the board to get any additional input from board members on how that process could be improved. And then that was immediately put out for public comment. Then before the board would consider the matter further, the board said we really wanted to get a review of the public comment because there was so much interest. I think there was probably hundreds of public comments on EOI. And perhaps in the past we would have had a summary from the staff, perhaps verbally, on what the public comments were. In this instance, we asked the staff to actually do a very thorough analysis and to actually publish that analysis for people to respond to say whether they thought their comments had actually been read and received correctly, and that was a public document. So then the board then was able to meet and receive that material. And also then said, well, because there is quite a diversity of views on this, we really want to make sure that we have the opportunity to hear from the community in more of a dialogue rather than just purely reading the public comment submissions. So we strongly encouraged the meeting that I think was in March of this year to actually... it might have been Nairobi, I'll get confused between the meetings, probably Nairobi. But we actually ran a panel. And many of the board members attended that panel and listened to the community's views on EOI. Then there was a public forum where that was obviously a topic that was discussed. And then the board deliberated on that. So the board wasn't relying just on the staff briefing material, but actually had the benefit of hearing from the public and hearing, I guess, the nuances that different people had on that. And then we made a final decision on that. I think towards the end of that week, might have been the Thursday night or something before the board meeting on the Friday. So many people had sort of said, oh, you've already decided back in December of 2009 because you've published this document saying how an EOI might work, so therefore that must be how it is. Just wanted to be very clear, that's a classic example of where at no stage did the board approve that. It basically was using a process, giving some input, but really trying to encourage the community. So I think that's an example of the last 6 months from beginning to end where, although we're getting staff briefing materials, we're very actively engaging with the community as we go.
Thanks, Bruce. Right. Any questions from the review team? Olivier.
Yes, and I'm not quite understood what is published and what is not published in the briefing material you mentioned, because that was a question that was raised in some of the meeting we had already. People want to have everything. Some people want to have everything published. Thank you.
So I think you know, part of what the staff is trying to do is produce a bit of a summary of some of the main community perspectives, and that that's included in the board briefing materials, but that's then referenced the actual source documents. So what we receive is a bit of a summary, but with links to all the source documents, which are actually the formal submissions. So, you know, if it's a summary of the GAC, we might get two or three sentences, but then we actually have a link to the actual GAC guidelines, or if it's the ALAC response, etc. So the executive summary, as I say, is about one or two pages, generally with the links to the reference documents. But that executive summary is just in the board book.
Question really was about what's published, and that's a specific question which I know Ray wants to talk about. So any other questions to Bruce about what the materials that are coming up are? I suppose the other thing to mention, Bruce, in addition to what you've said, is any GAC advice is specifically identified and pointed out and if necessary discussed, and on a couple of occasions we have, where we've looked like we might be disagreeing with GAC advice, started to prepare for that discussion, and then eventually we've managed to reconcile things separately. So that's another one. And
it's not just GAC advice as well. So it's where you might get, we've had CCNSO advice, for example, or feedback being presented in the context of some of the GNSO stuff with geographic names, for example. So it's where there are other parts of ICANN external to the particular supporting organisation's advice that we're also, our attention is drawn to their perspectives as well.
And just finally, I think something that has improved dramatically in the 6 years that I've been involved, and that's the detail and presentation of by the staff of the analysis of public comment. I think in the early days, it was assumed that board members were reading every one of the public comments and could operate on that sort of a basis. Quite clearly, that's not possible. And I think throughout the new GTLD process, particularly, that's been that the quality of that's improved enormously. And by way of example, I think in relation to the XXX application and the treatment of that, we've had something like 13,000 public comments that the staff have done a fantastic job of analysing and presenting and describing, etc. So that's what we get.
Thank you. George.
Thank you. As a new board member, you might be interested in my experience in dealing with the board books. My first board meeting, I was overwhelmed by the volume and the content that I was presumably expected to assimilate. On the other hand, by the second meeting, it turns out that with some knowledge of the issues and some framework to hang these materials on, they're well indexed. They're in general quite well written. It becomes fairly easy, not only to study them beforehand and to assimilate, but also to use them as reference during meetings. So I think the staff is doing a good job. I don't know what's happened prior to my joining the board, but I'm pretty happy with what I get and how easy it is to use.
Thank you for that, George. Willie.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. The public forums, are those inputs captured by the staff and fed into the board, or how does that feed into the board's process?
I think the board's generally at the public forum, so we don't get a separate written document on the public forum because we're generally at the public forum.
Willie, I frequently use the transcript of that. That's relatively available. I go back on occasion quite frequently to see what was said by members of the community. We've looked at ways of doing a more formal treatment of that. The highlight of that was a couple of years ago where we took every single comment that was made in the public forum and prepared a formal written response and posted it. And we found out afterwards that almost nobody visited that page and didn't actually care. So we've sort of detuned that a bit. But say the key result of that forum for me often is the transcript, which I find a very useful record.
And that's helpful. But just to note and follow up, in the meeting with the ALAC that we just came from, one of the questions we heard was, in the public forum, what does the board do with the question that I asked? And noting that in very often you do get an on-the-spot response from the board, but the question poses what happens afterwards. So almost how does the board take it into account after the public forum and make it part of its decision-making process? So just to note that, and recognizing your response with regard to the transcript, it's on people's minds. Should we move on to Ray if there are no other questions?
So one problem we're having is that people aren't identifying themselves, and we're taking a scribed account of this open proceeding. So before the speakers start, if they could identify themselves, that would be very useful.
Thanks, John. This is Brian. Ray, please.
Good to see you again, Brian. I've been asked to discuss questions 4 and 5. Question 4 being, should briefing materials be publicly posted? Why or why not? And question 5, what changes in the board selection process, board operations, or board decision-making processes would you like to see implemented? And I assume that you as the board as a whole and not me personally. Let me begin by saying that the work that's come out of the board review working group touches on many, if not all, aspects of these questions, and the implementation of those recommendations is underway. Regarding to public posting, there's obviously some material that is not appropriate for public posting. Those that include advice of counsel, those that would impair ICANN's future business activities, but you know, such as not, but not limited to releasing of consulting arrangements, so and other types of information that are given to ICANN with an expectation of confidentiality. Information provided to ICANN by specific government entities and other information that relates to strategic business decisions relationships, the release of which could cause some harm in ICANN's ability to pursue its activities to do the best job possible. That being said, the staff papers, one thing the board continuously strives to do is to make sure that the staff papers that are presented to it are do accurately reflect information. So to the extent that, as Bruce pointed out, we have these executive summaries, but we also have the original source document to individually go into depth to look at, there is a continual emphasis to make sure that we, the board, understand that the staff has coordinated where appropriately with the people that generated the particular source document or are cognizant enough of what's going on. So that is the beforehand thing. Now, afterwards, public posting of documents that may be useful to support the minutes of the proceedings, we're looking at some of those things as far as ways of doing it. So this is a work in progress. We are fully committed to being transparent as much as possible, but also being transparent in an appropriate and responsible manner. And that is just as important as transparency in general. So that's where we're going with that. So as I said, that's a work in progress. In fact, we've had some substantial discussions on that recently, and we're continuing to move forward on it. The issue that was raised earlier about taking material that's been presented to the board and the board not acting on it, in fact, as Dennis pointed out, pushing it back into the appropriate place for discussion. A recent example of that is the vertical integration issue, which the board said we shouldn't be acting on this at the moment because we don't know what the particular community and the supporting organization really thinks of this issue. And so that was pushed back to the GNSO and said, do some work on this and come back and tell us what you really think about this. What is the community consensus on this? And so, and as Dennis pointed out, we're going to continually to try and do that so that the board does operate more in the oversight role that it's supposed to be in and can, in fact, produce true oversight of the entire organization. And so we also, in terms of board operations, are looking at ways, as you may or may not be aware, board the terms of board members varies. Those selected by the NOMCOM generally change at the annual general meeting, whereas those that are selected by the supporting organizations occur prior to that.
Excuse me, Ray, are you moving into number five?
Board
selection process, just to be clear?
Five and six, yeah. Four or five, rather, yes.
Okay. Would you mind if I get a question relating to four before we move into board selection?
Sure.
The publication of staff papers to the board, a very consistent complaint that we've been hearing is that those papers should be made public. You've articulated some bases upon which the board deems certain documents should not, in fact, be made public, and that's understood and heard. I think it's fair to say that the concern underlying that issue in the community is that this is supposed to be a bottom-up policy-making process, community-based, and there's concern that the staff papers to the board could somehow affect the framing of the issues, the data provided to the board that it considers to make ultimately a decision. Has there been any discussion among the board about publishing those papers and identifying what parts could be, what parts couldn't be, should they be in whole or in part?
I did talk about that previously, by virtue of the fact that the board receives not only an executive summary, but the source documents. So there is that check and balance to begin with right there. There may be a GNSO paper or a CCNSO paper or whatever, or some particular interest group paper about something and to which a staff summary has been written. So due diligence on the part of board members is one thing. But the other aspect of it really is that the board having an assurance that coordination has occurred and so forth. Looking at some sort of a public comment period, if you will, on staff papers prior to them being used by the board would probably add an encumbrance to the process that we really don't need. So there is this balance that has to be achieved between transparency and openness, as well as the responsibility of the board to be able to conduct this business in an efficient manner.
But more specifically, yes, there is a program underway at the right now to publish the papers at the same time as the resolutions go up. And perhaps John, you might be able to explain where that's got to in the work plan.
Yes. So actually, for the most recent board meeting. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. You know, the one voice the scribes probably know is mine, though. I hired them. But in the book itself, we've gone through for the last board meeting, my staff has gone through it, taken out the attorney-client privilege information, the information that clearly cannot be produced or should not be produced, and we actually have it in a form to be able to publish it with the minutes that would be approved at this board meeting. So it would show the majority of the work that's not already published, and it would show the links to the things that were published. We're hoping to actually move that even to an earlier point, but this is a test, in a way, to see whether that's effective and whether anybody's even going to look at it.
I'm on record on having said this on a number of occasions. I'm completely in favor of the material being released before the board makes its decision. I see no reason why the basis of the staff recommendation, the material considered, etc., shouldn't go out at the same time as the agenda, which would allow even an opportunity for some concerted lobbying of the board in case there's something that's gone wrong and additional information in the process. The difficulty we have is simply the timeline and the amount of work. As Rita said, what we've done over the years is gradually shifted timelines back so that I can distinctly remember when I was first on the board, I got 24 hours to sign or not sign one of the most important contracts ICANN was ever faced with. We don't have that anymore, and we've now got agendas published 10 days in advance and the papers 7 days in advance. We just haven't quite worked out, as a matter of logistics, how we can produce the papers early enough to get them out and do that, but there's no problem at all with it as a matter of principle. It's simply a question of the logistics.
Right, and as I said, we've been discussing, and as John points out, we do have work in progress to address this, but we want to make sure we do this in the most responsible manner possible.
Thank you. Fabio?
Well, I come from an organization that had the same problem, the European Commission, and it has discussed at length the extent to which, under the access to document policy, it should make available the briefing material that was prepared for the commissioners. And the commission came to the conclusion that no, it will not make this material available. So I have quite a lot of understanding for the hesitations that many of you have. On the other hand, all the contacts that we've had until now really suggest that there is a perception, I'm stressing a perception, out there that the bottom-up advice that comes from the various sources, communities, and so on, reaches the board, together with a short piece of paper coming from the staff saying, all this is rubbish, forget it, and then the board simply ignores the advice, the suggestions that are coming from the grassroots organizations. So, in spite of the fact that there are very good arguments for maintaining a certain amount of confidentiality, allowing the organization to think, I think it would be in the interest of the board of ICANN to go ahead and publish this material as much as possible in order to allay this perhaps wrong perception.
As Peter said and I've said, we are looking at ways of doing that. I don't think that there is a hesitancy on the part of the board to actually do this, but I think there is a hesitancy on the board to be able to do this in the right way so that it's done in a responsible way and not to encumber the operational capability of the board. So the intent is to do it.
Got a speaking order starting with Mike and then Yoni and then Rita and then Dennis. So let's keep them short, please. Mike. Thanks. Yoni?
Jonas Hoinen, and I'm the ETSI liaison to the board. I just wanted to actually say that what has been already said before and kind of like reinforce that still, that we really do think, I think most or even all of the board think that these materials should be published. It's not only about that we are thinking about what of the materials should be published, but just how can we publish in the way that it makes sense for the community also, that it's readable and gives the kind of like right impression what comes out. But I think most of that have been said already before. Thank you.
Thanks, Johnny. Rita?
Yeah, thanks, Fabio. I think you've highlighted the paradigm here, which is most people would like to have this published, but it is a risk for an organization. And I think that the board has heard the criticisms, or the perception at least of the criticism, that the board isn't getting necessarily complete or accurate briefing papers. And the only real reason that the board is not entirely publishing is because these are papers that are prepared by our lawyers. So I'm going to just pick on Stuart because I've known him for a long time and I see him in the corner over there. But I don't know if Stu would want to have all the papers that his lawyer prepares for him published. So that's really the only issue. It's that we would publish them completely. We're just trying to work through the process of balancing transparency and ensuring to the community that we are getting accurately briefed, with the need for sometimes to have some attorney-client privileges. So the process, I think, will hopefully be satisfactory to people as we're developing it.
Thanks, Rita. Dennis?
Well, I have concerns about this, I have to say. Yes, everybody would like full transparency and publish the documents. But my concerns are that by doing that and then giving a reasonable window of opportunity for people to read them and comment, that actually we'll be revisiting the whole public comment process, and once again inviting people to escalate the discussion to the board. So that may or may not be a good reason for not doing it. I think we have to move cautiously here. My own personal view is that we probably should start publishing the documents with the decisions, so that at least the community can see the documents as they were, as we used, as a first step, and then trial certain documents. Because the last thing I would like to see from a governance point of view is that we have to publish documents so far ahead and incite so much inflammatory discussion that in fact the board then becomes the arbiter of a new revisit of all the discussions, and that would be fundamentally wrong. So I'm not against it in principle, but I'm cautious and have concerns about it.
Thanks, Senator. John, you had a comment?
Just one additional thing that I think is worth pointing out. We have a policy called the DIDP, ICANN's Documentary Information Disclosure Policy, which actually allows anyone in the community to submit a request for documentation. And there's a specific set of criteria under which we could not produce that, like attorney-client privileges. But the general rule is that if it's in the possession, custody, or control of ICANN, and it's a document relating to any of these things we're talking about, that could be produced if someone were to request it. And we've had a number of instances where there have been requests on it already, but it's underutilized, so I'm in fact attempting to sell it a little bit.
Thanks, John. It's great to have these policies and then see them being thoroughly worked by the community. Mike, and then Bruce, and then I think we're probably ready to move on.
Just to try and address the underlying question, because having been on the boards now just over a year, I also came on with this rumour that there's been staff capture and staff is feeding the board what it wants the board to know, and the board makes decisions based on staff perceptions of issues. And I've tried, when I've seen certain statements in summary papers, I've gone back to communities, I've asked, I've investigated, I've questioned the people who reported to have said things. And up until now, I haven't come across a single instance where staff have been inaccurate. Yes, in a summary document, you're always going to have some slight perception issues. But then again, it could be the subjectivity of my reading of the staff summary. I haven't gone with the staff summary and shown it to the person and said, is this accurate, but rather have asked them for their views and compared it to what my recall of the staff summary. And up until now, I haven't yet come across a situation in just over a year where there's been any fundamental inaccuracy, other than possible some slight subjectivity issues, which unfortunately happen because we're human. And I think that when the document publication process is finalized, people are going to see that, and then they're going to actually have to come up with other reasons why the board makes the decisions that they're unhappy with.
Cheryl.
At a perfect segue to what I almost wanted to say, decided not to, and then decided I will after all. I think it needs to be very clear, Cheryl Langdon Orr here for the Scribes, needs to be very clear that what we're hearing is not that they believe there is an error, but rather that they feel, while the perception of error exists, that is not good for the accountability and transparency and the argument, because what we saw in Marina Del Rey when we saw the board book is our fears are unfounded. And even the formal approach, JJ, just to be really very clear, even in what the non-commercial stakeholder group and the at-large advisory committee has put forward to you formally, we are asking for at decision or after meeting publication. So I think some of us are also overworking the problem, both outside at the edges and also here in this room. It's a matter of, if we know that this is not the case, then we will stop being so concerned. And I hope we don't find other reasons to believe that the board is being captured in any way, shape or form.
I think you get used to Mike's cynicism about some of these things. Bruce.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. I'm one of the board members that would like to see the board books be published, coming from that sort of GNSO background where that's done. And I think you're right. I think the key thing is there's the transparency and trust part is being able to see the documents that the board made a decision on. So I think that's important. The other part of it is people feeling that their views haven't been properly summarised, because that's the other element of it, that the public comment process has thousands of comments sometimes. And the board's not going to read 1,000 comments, so the board's asking the staff to summarise those, and that's why we've been sort of insisting, particularly lately, and that's why I use the example of the EOI, that the staff actually publish their analysis of those public comments, because then you have an opportunity to go back and say, you completely missed my point, because you accept the staff have got to get your point down to one sentence, but you hope that one sentence is roughly on track. So that's why the other part of it is making sure that the comments are fed back to you as to this is what we learnt from them.
And finally, the reason I'd like to see them published is just I think the community really doesn't appreciate what an extraordinary amount of work the board does, and getting this all out, you know, would help with the perception of how much work the board does. Can we move on to the next topic?
I've got one more question. Warren, please.
Yeah, I just want to make Warren Edelman. Just want to make one comment, Peter. And I think, you know, the issue of optics is extremely important. And I think what you heard from Cheryl and others is this perception that there's a, even if everything is being done, there's an optical issue. And I just want to respond to John's comment on the request for information process and that it's being underutilized. Well, at my company, you know, we certainly like to utilize all of the channels that we can to, you know, educate ourselves, et cetera. And we had some serious questions that I think were also questions that others in the community and in various constituencies had, and we put in a request for information. And this would have been a couple of years ago now, and we got not a single answer back. Every single thing was deemed confidential. And, you know, the perception was then you can drape anything in confidentiality and thus not provide the information. And I think that creates, again, these sort of conspiracy theories that we heard in a previous meeting, et cetera. So I think it's one thing to say that these means are available and underutilized, and another thing to substantiate why are you deeming everything confidential.
If I can possibly step in, it's Mike here again. I think that possibly you're not hearing what Ray and JJ are saying, which is fundamentally restructuring the documents so that out of a summary document, there will be a paragraph which may be confidential, which can be redacted easily and conveniently. So the rest of the document, 90% of the document, can be published or made available in terms of an access to information request. And the confidential information can simply be removed without affecting the impact of the rest of the document or even necessarily the structure of the document having to have significant portions blacked out. But there is just, and John is talking about educating and training his team to move to drafting in that manner, that attorney-client privileged, confidential, or other information that shouldn't be disclosed is put into a separated section which can easily be removed and edited out, and we get the fundamental of the document ready for publication without significant effort and editing when the team has worked so hard during the meeting week anyway.
Well, I actually totally understood what was being said, but I was responding to John's commentary on the request for information process, which was separate from staff briefing papers, where there was, you know, I think we would have preferred some level of redaction of the documentation as opposed to, you know, a summary that said we cannot provide this because it's confidential.
Okay, let's move to question six then. And
I think it's useful just to point out that that's published. So the letter is published and the response to the letter is published. So we publish everything in that documentary information disclosure policy. So the request that comes in and our responses are transparent. So if there are complaints about that, there's an appeal mechanism, which I don't believe was utilized in this case. And there's also opportunities through reconsideration requests, ombudsman, and other ways to reach it if you believe that the staff response was incorrect.
Okay. Question six is about
progress. Peter, we haven't done five.
That's true.
Sorry.
We've got a half an hour left. 5, 6, Larry, and then 11, 12, 13, if we can make it. Please.
Very briefly on five. Some of this has already been covered earlier. But as I was beginning to say, one of the things that we're working on is to, as I said, the NOMCOM seats are aligned with the terms, are aligned with the annual general meeting, but the supporting organization seats have not been. And so we are seeking to find a way of aligning the supporting organization seats with a meeting. And in fact, this meeting right here represents the first go at that, in that Raimundo Becca, whose term actually ended about the 22nd of May, somewhere in there, is present at this meeting. He's an observer, but he is actually in this meeting. And so that's one thing that we're looking at in terms of the selection process, so that board members just don't all of a sudden disappear between meetings. We're also actively working, staff is actively working on a process regarding the formalization of identification of needed skill sets so that these we can provide on a standard basis to the nominating committee. Here are the skill sets of a board member. And so that it is a standard type, if you will, of skills that are looked for by the NOMCOM. In essence, looking at it from, if you were advertising a job, you would have a job description type thing out there. And the last piece of it is that the CEO is working to formalize a training program provide a certain level of the skills that the board members need to function properly.
Thank you, Ray.
You want to move
six.
On?
Yeah.
Question six is about improving accountability mechanisms, and I've asked Rita if she'd have a look at that one. Rita.
Sure. I think our chairman had a rare lapse in judgment where I'm going to answer a question that has to do with the President's Strategy Committee report because I was not very happy when we had a report that was given to the board, I think, 1 hour before former CEO Toomey wanted to post it, and the board didn't even have a chance to read it. So I think that it's safe to say that that whole issue, all the recommendations in that President's Strategy Committee are sort of off to the side now. And I think that, quite frankly, all the work that this group is going to be doing is going to make huge strides in terms of improving our accountability and transparency. Rahm is going to talk a little bit about the ombudsman here, but the specific question, Brian, talked about progress that's been made since the AOC was signed, and I think that there hasn't been much since that's the reason we're all here. But I can tell you all that, not surprisingly, the board has not just started thinking about accountability and transparency since the AOC. This has been an issue that's been ongoing, and we've talked to you about sort of the various iterations that have been made in the recent past regarding transparency and accountability, including this notion of publishing board materials. I think something else that we wanted to mention was that the IRP decision that was recently filed in February 2010 was published. What it says here is immediately after receipt, but soon after receipt, so that everybody could read in the community what the IRP panel came up with. And as we all know, that was not favorable to the ICANN board per se. So ICANN is going to be moving very quickly. We've had a number of discussions on that decision, and we intend to be quite transparent in how we reach our decision with respect to that. I think I'll kind of open it up for other questions. I think that's enough on that point, unless anybody has a question.
So, I'd like to get at this with a slightly different question, which is, this board and this organization has been studying accountability and transparency for how many years? It's like every year you've got a report for that year. What advice do you have for us as we do this study and this report that we can once and for all bring these issues to a head and get them resolved so that we don't have to do this until the 3 years is up, as laid out in the affirmation of commitments to do an update? I frankly, at the time I signed the affirmation of commitments, did not have the full appreciation for all the effort and resources that have been spent to look at this issue prior to now. I'm actually more troubled, I think, by the fact that all that effort was put in place and didn't get these issues resolved. So we've got another chance here with this review team. What advice do you have for us as to how we carry out our work or go about making recommendations to try to bring some finality to this?
Well, I know that I'd like to think that one tenet that can start to really integrate itself in the ICANN community is reasonableness. And I think that I've seen in my 5 years on the board a continued effort to be transparent and accountable. But people have different ideas, Larry, as to what that means. So, you know, the board has come up with producing minutes. The minutes are considerably more detailed than they were when I came onto the board. I think that's one way of being transparent. I think that board members have made a concerted effort at board meetings, which we would love to see better attended. I'm very dismayed to hear when people say that they're going home on a Thursday for an ICANN meeting because the board meeting is not worth their time. I think that they should start paying attention at board meetings because we do all make statements about, you know, our views on some things. And now we're talking about publishing staff papers. But I think, Larry, each group around the ICANN organization would have different views on transparency and accountability. So we've been sort of chasing chasing our tail, but the target is always moving. So I think that the organization and this board and this management is committed to saying, let's have this survey done of the community. Let's come up with concrete goals that we can execute, because I don't think we've been very good at saying, this is your chance to come to the table. Let's get things on the table and let's execute.
So your advice to us is what? Is it to conduct the end-all and be-all of surveys, or what? How can we serve this process in a way that provides a little more finality to this?
Larry, I've got people putting their hands up hoping to answer that, starting at that end, Jean-Jacques, and then Harold, and then Dennis, and then Vanda. So let's see if they can. Jean-Jacques, please help.
Thank you, Peter. This is Jean-Jacques Subrenard. To try to answer Larry Strickling's question, which I find extremely important, I'd say two things. One is, how about being a bit comparative, but on a world scale? And the other one is, what are really the objectives in terms of results of the review you are undertaking? So I'll take the first point first. I don't come from the United States, as you can hear from my accent. And I must say that looking around in my past life and all around me today, I can't think of another organization which puts so much effort into transparency and accountability to such a degree of detail. The European Union, which I also know, does that to a larger extent also now. But for a private organization, I don't know of many like that. So what I would suggest, Mr. Strickling, is that the performance of ICANN be measured not only against the expectations, which may be movable or may move like targets in time, but that it be compared with actual performance of other meaningful organizations at the same time. Thank you.
And Jean-Jacques, Harold?
And then I am sorry that to inform you that I don't think we will achieve finality. We have people in the community who are demanding the impossible and believe that that the impossible should be delivered to them. We cannot. What I believe we should aim for is to acknowledge that we have a common goal of operating in an open, transparent manner. Acknowledge that we have made great strides forward, that there are things we can't do, and that we have to live with this tension. So I believe that we have to look at where we are and where we are going within the next short while and answer the question, is this appropriate, good enough? Are there other problems we should solve, should attack, that are more important than increasing transparency just a little more? When we reach the point when other things are more important for the internet and for the world, we should say we have succeeded. It does not mean that we will find a place where everyone's happy. It means that we have found a place where we're doing well enough. That's my personal opinion on a very philosophical level. Thank you.
Fabio?
I think that we should be expanding the discussion to what is in question number 13, because the question is not just transparency in making all the documents available. The question is about giving the community the impression that they've been heard, that their arguments have been rejected, but why? And so I think even more important than making documents available, making the briefings available, it's important the question of explaining why decisions are taken. And there, I anticipate a bit my fear. I'm a bit worried by the expression that Rita used about protecting the corporation, because I recognize that there is a trade-off between explaining how you have taken a decision and why, and opening yourself to challenges, to legal challenges. But Jean-Jacques Subrenat made the example with other organizations, private organizations. I think that the comparison with private organization is not relevant, because ICANN is a private organization, but perhaps for 20% of its work, it performs a public policy purpose. So for that part, it has to be compared to public organizations. So my suggestion would be to enlarge it, to move on to 13, and continue the general discussion, including the question 13.
Fabio, can I take from that, though, that you accept the Subrenat principle that we should be comparing ourselves to like organizations rather than attempting to set some ideal standard?
I think this is correct, but you also have to recognize, this was mentioned, that you're dealing with the internet community, that is a particular community, it's a particular expression of human nature, that probably sets the bar at a much higher level than we had before, so that is a problem for all of us.
Dennis, Fonda, and then Eric.
Advice was asked for, and I'd like to pick up that last comment. The community sets the bar. The problem is the community sets the bar individually, and it's just floating there. There's no measure of goodness. We all want to be good, but how good is good enough? There's no measure. Everybody wants more of this, more of that, and so on, and so do we. So the advice I'd offer is that we need to find some objective standard, whether it's a public organization or the best of not-for-profit corporations in the United States, according to the NACD, the National Association of Company Directors, whatever. Some objective standard against which we agree we will be measured. And then we either meet that standard or we don't meet that standard. If then the community wants to raise the bar, to redefine the standard to a higher standard, let's define that standard and we'll go and meet it. But what we can't do is be constantly criticized for not meeting a standard which is entirely flexible and personally interpreted by each individual. We want to get there, but let's try and put some objectivity in it so that you can measure it, because essentially the reviews are about measuring accountability and transparency. Measured against some standard that is published, that we've agreed, the community has agreed, we'll try and meet that, and then if you want to raise the bar, we'll try and meet that again. So you ask for advice, that would be my advice on the process. That means you know where we're going, we know where we're going, and together, over the successive reviews, we can get to each agreed step in a higher level of accountability and transparency standard.
Thanks, Dennis. Vanda?
Yes. Well, I have been twice in the board and in the GAC and in the at large. What I see that is the main problem for the community do not recognize progress is mostly based on difference of cultural approach. What is important for one group and the way we address issues for the general public is certainly based one kind of cultural. And this kind of culture is not exactly the same, so the understanding of the answer that we are given to the public is not the perception is not the same from Pakistan, from India, from Brazil, or for wherever. So what I suggest personally is to use more our at-large community to help to address correctly to that community what is the answer of any issues that we have. Probably have inside our meetings with the regional groups, we could have one specific event just to address, you know, after the public, for instance, after the public meeting, we can just public forum, we just can sit together and explain to the regional groups what was said, what was decided, what was our points on that, because I'm tired to list after the meeting people that have been here could not understand what really was said in the public forum. So that is something that I believe could help in some way, and it's not adding cost or something. The people are there. It's just some time to better address the answer we already have, explain the papers we read, have published, etc. So that's my point and my suggestion for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Vandana. I think I need direction of the meeting here. We've had quite a lot of discussion on this, but I still have a speaking order of Eric, Yanni, Harold, and Brian. And now George, would you like to keep talking about this issue and say the new things that I'm sure you're all going to say, or would you like to move to some of the later questions? Who wants to stay on this topic? Raise your hands. Eric does, because he's next in the speaking order. All right, Eric, we'll let you go and then we'll move on. Fabio.
Can I repeat my suggestion? Question 13 is yes. Part of this discussion.
Yeah, let's have Eric and then let's move to 12 or 13. Eric.
Thank you. Ciertamente comienzo a hablar en español y muy pocos de la mesa me van a poder entender si es que no hablan español. So I will try to do it in English again. If I am speaking Spanish, a lot of the people in the table could be impossible to understand me. Mm-hmm. The transparency also involucrates the translation of the documents. Sometimes the interpretation to have the opportunity to dialogue. Sometimes. But we are in a community involved in technical stuff. We speak in English to try to understand. Well, your English is better than my Spanish. But when we try to find the transparency, I think that I can not only make the best efforts like organization, is created a culture of transparency of the documents, a culture of transparency to asking to the people, asking to the community. But for some reason, if you see the website in ICANN about questions or comments to the community, you don't see comments. For some reason, the community receives the documents, read the documents. You can follow the quantity of the information that is downloaded, but they don't comment. They don't comment directly. Maybe a question related with 13 point 12, 13, and 14. I mix these three questions is why the community don't participate using the system that is made and created right now. Why they need the documents in their own language, they need special capacities to understand the situation, or it's simply that they only want to talk when they have some interest affected directly. If that is the reason, we don't need to asking another thing.
Thanks, Eric. Let's move down to questions 12 and 13, which we think are linked, and Jean-Jacques, who chairs the Public Participation Committee, has asked to speak to these. Jean-Jacques.
Thank you, Peter. This is Jean-Jacques Subrenard. I'd like to try to put this in perspective since you asked me to treat both 12 and 13. Putting this in perspective makes me say first that it didn't all start with the affirmation of commitments, of course. It started before that, among others, with the President's Strategy Committee work and its report. But what the AOC does do is to confirm the importance of these questions of the community input. And it makes it a much clearer obligation for us to take care of the community input and how we react to it and how we follow up. So public participation has been set up as a board committee less than 2 years ago, about a year and a half ago. And some of the things we've managed to do, I think, may be of significance for the broader picture of how do you involve the public, not just to improve the figures or the statistics, but actually to engage the public or the community in contributing to the policy formulation, and that's what it's really about. So several things. We heard over several years that one of the complaints was that we didn't know in advance for public meetings of ICANN what was really the agenda, the documents came in too late, etc., etc. So I won't go into the detail, but I just want to make you aware that we, with the staff, prepared and published a document deadline policy, but also rules, very stringent rules for the fixation of the agenda of these international meetings. There is also some improvement, I hope, in the way the public forum is conducted under the leadership of the chairman of the board in these public meetings. And also, this is not negligible, the remote participation side of it, which, by the way, lowers the CO2 imprint in some cases by providing much better tools for remote participation. So, and the linguistic aspect, which was just mentioned by Eric, is very much part of that preoccupation. For instance, 2-3 years ago, interpretation, simultaneous interpretation was provided, I should say, almost exceptionally, whereas now it's systematic, and you can have the detail of that if you wish. So the real problem here, I think, and this has been mentioned by several members of the review team, is feedback. And I agree, this is the real challenge. What is the rhythm? What is the importance of the feedback we can give? And we're working on that. Now, on question 13, if I may move on to that, which is the board attempts to... do you feel that the board does an adequate job of explaining its decisions? So I think that the board goes to great lengths to provide the rationale behind its decisions. For instance, the care with which the whereas clauses are crafted before any resolution or with any resolution was really a matter of surprise first and then of admiration for myself when I realized to what extent it tries to reflect and to, in advance, respond to the preoccupations of the community. I think that we also provided, when necessary and when that is the case, voting statements, for instance, anyone voting against or abstaining. But this being said, I think the board recognizes without difficulty that we can do more efforts in providing more and better and perhaps more usable background information on the decisions we are taking. And there again, I would like to assure the review team that we're working on that. So, if I may make, to end my presentation, an overall comment, I'd say that we are very conscious in ICANN on the board that the credibility of this organization depends to a degree, perhaps to a large degree even, on the way in which we involve, but also we react or interact with our community. We have shown and we will show even more openness and forthcoming character of our way of engaging the community in the formulation of policy. And I think that in that sense, the PPC, the Public Participation Committee, is just one instrument among many others. But since it's the most recent one, which was set in place when Peter became the chairman of the board, I thought I'd underline its role. Thank you.
Thanks, Jean-Jacques. Housekeeping matters. We have 5 minutes to go before the scheduled end. Many of us could actually stay another 15 minutes, and I'm prepared to run the meeting on another 15 minutes if that's any assistance. Brian has indicated that he has a 3:30 appointment and can't make it, but I see that our co-chair of the review team, Manal, is here, so Manal will be able to fill in for Brian. Has anybody got a difficulty with extending to 3:45? I see none. So let's assume that we've got another 20 minutes then to get through the rest of these questions. I have a speaking order with Brian, Mike and Manal. Ray, do you want to get on the speaking order, or are you making a...
It's just a comment in regards to the agenda. It had been stated at the beginning of this meeting that there was some discussion requested regarding question number 11. I will point out the fact that question number 11 was asked this morning or this afternoon, whenever that it was, in the joint board GAC working group. And so you would expect to hear the same answer as you heard this morning. So I don't know if it's necessary to do that.
All right. Let's treat 11 as substantially asked or answered, and that means we move forward to the next question. Oh, sorry, speaking order. Sorry, Brian.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques. With regard to number 13, and this is for Jean-Jacques or anybody on the board, a very common and constant plea that I have heard in my individual capacity and as part of this review team is, can the board explain why my input or position was rejected? And I've focused on this question myself for some time and did a little bit of research, talked to some folks who work at the Federal Communications Commission, because in U.S. communications law jurisprudence, very often the decision will explain why certain positions were rejected and why others were accepted as a basis for the decision. It's a very common thing. There is a legislative framework that promotes that sort of explanation in your decision making. There's also another component, which I didn't fully appreciate until I talked to some FCCers, is that the existence of the court system as a tribunal that could eventually overturn fully a commission decision provides the added incentive for those decision makers to explain not only the basis for why they came to a conclusion and the positions that supported that, but also explain those positions that were rejected and why. This doesn't seem like a very hard thing to me. Is there a reason why the board to date, is the board considering revising its framework for writing decisions to include, and I can tell you this is a very common, strong complaint, not just with regard to board decisions, but also down in the policy development process. Across the community, you hear constantly, I don't care if you tell me that you're rejecting my position. Just tell me you're rejecting my position and why. So do you have any comments on that?
Bruce and then Kateem.
Brian, certainly I've heard that related from the community many times as well. I just want to understand a little bit, perhaps you can explain those processes that you mentioned a little bit more. Like we tend to operate a little bit in what I'd call real time. Like we have a board meeting, we're meeting during the week, we have a meeting typically on the Thursday night to discuss what people talked about in the public forum. Then we make a decision on Friday, which is all transcribed, and we try and pretty much make our resolutions, you know, maybe a few paragraphs in length to give the outcome. Are you talking about something that might happen several weeks later, which is a more detailed analysis? I just want to understand the steps you're talking about. Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about in the board resolutions that we have, you know, like two or three page resolution explaining the pros and cons of everything, or is it more of an after the fact analysis document?
It would be in the decisional document. So when a decision is rendered on a particular issue, within that document, the explanation, analysis, acceptance and rejection of positions would be articulated.
Prior to that decision being made. Because yeah. The impact of that probably would mean that we would have a board meeting a month after the ICANN meetings, I would say, before we could get that level of analysis. So just understand, that's probably how I would respond, is that we do operate in real time. We listen, we're at the public forum, we listen, then we make a decision. Then the detail you're talking about would have to be done after the fact. Or we actually wait for our board meeting, which has been discussed in the board, that should we be having a board meeting on Friday, should we be having a board meeting next month after this week and after the staff do a lot of the write-ups. That's a community choice, I guess.
Thanks, Bruce. I've got Mike and then Manal and then Kateem and then Harold. So let's start with Mike.
Thanks. If I can go back to Mr. Strickland's comment, just because I wanted to wrap up the comments that I've heard. So ICANN, and having been in a involved in ICANN for over 10 years now. ICANN is an organization that seems to go through a process of continuous improvement. We're continually analyzing, we're continually assessing where we make mistakes. We're often making minor modifications to try and get maximum improvement for minimum effort, and often we succeed. And I think where this review team is really a good idea is to give us an objective outside view with some insiders' views as well, to say that continuous improvement is working, or guys, here's some key issues that you need to look at, fix those, then carry on with your continuous improvement process, and we'll look at you again in 3 years' time, because ongoing minor tweaking to achieve continuous improvement is a good idea. I was planning on responding or discussing an idea very similar, because it seemed to be coming out of some of the comments made, Brian, and then you hit the nail on the head, which is, why don't we provide reasoned documents? And seeing you refer to the FCC, but we have one of the incoming regulators from my country sitting around the same table. For one big reason, and I see John Jeffries is already starting to shiver, in that we're not a regulator. We are definitely not a regulator. And the purpose of the ICANN board is not as a regulator, nor is it a council of the wise to make decisions on behalf of third parties. And I think part of the biggest problem in terms of accountability and transparency in this organization is that there are far too many people in this organization who are willing to take accountability for themselves and their actions, and so they pass responsibility again to the board. They push to the board decisions that they in their SOs should be making, and then they blame the board for decisions that are made, and why did you reject my input? Well, often we didn't reject your input. It was your own community who rejected your input in weeks and sometimes months and sometimes even years of discussion, round and round in circularities, and the vertical integration issue is a perfect position. The board pushed it back to the GNSO and said, we're being asked or tasked with making a decision that is not ours to make. We have set a default, you go and come up with a better idea. And what did we spend the first 3 weeks after that doing? Fending off requests for us to please explain the basis on which we derived the numbers that we had set as the default and what it actually meant, so that people could work out how bad their position was and whether the board default position was advantageous or disadvantageous to themselves. Instead of starting to work together to come up with something better, they spent 3 weeks arguing about what the board actually meant, when in fact we didn't mean anything. We meant go and do the work. We're not a regulator who holds hearings, hears submissions by different parties, considers the arguments, comes up with a reasons document, and publishes a reasons document. It's a world I know and in which I work every day. Sometimes I wish I can work that way, because we could just make decisions that we've seen a year or two ago. We were hoping it would go in a certain direction. We could have possibly even justified a decision in that direction, but we can't push that, because this is a bottom-up multi-stakeholder model which requires communities to come up with the policies that affect their lives.
Thanks, Mike. Manal.
Please excuse me.
Thanks, Peter. From what I hear, I think I really do appreciate what the board is doing to have everything put on the website, all the minutes and all the resolutions and everything. And I also do appreciate the frustration of some people from not being able to follow up, either because of the language or because of the amount of the material that's on the website, or because they don't know where to find or whom to talk to. So I think the problem may be that the community, although it's a hard task, but they need more interactive process. They sometimes it's not the decision itself, but the they have to know what the decision is and how was it based. So maybe something like a first line support for the ICANN that could really be interactive and deal with such requests, receive the requests from the people and either put them in contact with the right person or guide them through the website to the right information. I mean, just to guide them through the process and through the structure, or bring to them the answer at the right moment or interactively.
Thanks, Manal. Kateem?
Thanks, Peter. I was just going to say that I think Brian's request about what we can do to provide feedback for the decisions of the board, I mean, the reasons behind the decisions of the board, could in practice be fairly difficult and, you know, complicated to implement, mostly because of the fact that really, as we all know, when the board, as Mike pointed out, votes on decisions, we just vote, and then the votes are registered that it was carried or it wasn't carried. And I think if we want to provide explanations, then maybe what we probably ought to do is look at maybe operating along the lines of the Supreme Court, where when we vote, one person or somebody in those amongst those who vote agree to carry a resolution agrees to write a majority opinion as to the reasons why they voted the way they did. And somebody on the opposing side can do that too, something like a dissenting opinion or something like that. And of course, I'm not a lawyer, so I leave you guys, to those of us who are lawyers on the board, to figure out the modalities of doing something like that. There's also the option of simply referring people to the minutes of the board so that it would provide the context, at least help provide the context for the reasoning behind the votes that were carried at the end of the day. In that same vein, one could also, along the lines of what the previous discussion about providing more access to the board book and documentation that actually reaches the board as it prepares for its board meeting. The board book also frequently does carry, I mean, I think the staff usually does a very good job of presenting various aspects of various arguments on the issues. And I think anybody who reads that could also glean some information from those documents as to the possibilities that various board members might have, the possible ways various board members might have taken to actually arrive at the decisions. But of course, that still would be speculation. And so, like I said, the details could be fairly complicated. And let me say this finally. I think some of the problems we have, at least in my opinion, in regards to the whole issue of accountability and transparency, is, I think, symptomatic of the fact that there is a very essential function of the organization that I think we really haven't given it the due consideration it deserves. And that's the monitoring and evaluation function. We spend a lot of time and efforts and resources trying to get people to get involved in policy development, try to get people to involve in various aspects of the organization. But I don't think we really do justice to how do we go about the task of how do we go about actually evaluating and monitoring the actual effects and outcomes of those activities and resources that we put into play. Very briefly, there is in development thinking something called participatory appraisal, and more specifically participatory rural appraisal, where you go into villages and sit down with the people, the stakeholders, and, you know, together with them, do an evaluation of your interventions and activities. And I think ICANN should start thinking along those lines. How do we get the community involved, not only in policy development and also the various activities that we do, but also in coming up with a framework of appraising and assessing and evaluating the activities of the organization? Thanks.
Yes, Kateem. Harold?
It was a pity that our esteemed chair had to leave, because I wanted to ask him what he meant with positions. One issue with explaining why when people come and say my position got rejected, why, is exactly that. It's your position. And I remember reading through the list of comments on I think it was DAG 2, draft applicant guidebook version 2, like 400 comments, staff had summarized them into something like 50 areas, and I gave them a real hard time because they had missed number 143. Now, the board had to make an up and up or down or sideways, of course it was sideways, decision on the whole book. Now, if we were to have to explain why we rejected each and every one of those 400 positions, or the 399 we didn't, we would have a problem. So we can't. So that's obviously not what our esteemed chair intended. But I don't understand what I don't understand what other concept we have. I mean, we have a lot of bylaws saying if a stakeholder group or whatever it is comes to us with a policy, we basically have to have a supermajority to reject it, and we're pretty certain we have to explain ourselves why. But I don't understand.
I might help you with that later on, Harold, but I've got Yoni very quickly, and then Fabio. Is it an answer, Fabio? Quick reply, then.
There are plenty of organizations that already do that.
Which ones?
Well, the European Commission, for ones that I know directly.
So the European Commission responds to individuals?
The European Commission launches proposals on all many, many areas. Every proposal has to be accompanied by a public consultation and a detailed analysis of all the impacts. In the document called Impact Assessment, there is a total summary of the consultation. Usually it reads, we launched the consultation on our proposal 2 months ago. We received 1,750 submissions, 300 coming from organizations, some from individuals and everything. These submissions are all available on the website somewhere. But essentially, these submissions raise these 5 points. They can be regrouped into 5 categories. Out of these 5 categories, we felt that number 1 could not be done for these reasons, number 2 could not be done for this reason, number 3, that is the one that we are supporting, number 4 and 5 have been rejected.
Okay,
and
so
this document is available to everybody. You are not answering individually, but you are answering to broad categories of comments, and you are explaining why you are taking the decision. Mm-hmm. And as Brian has said, many other organizations, so all regulatory bodies, do this in the area of telecommunications, in audiovisual, and so on. This is a common policy, so it is not something far-fetched. I accept that that might require some changes in the calendar of your decisions because you must have these documents prepared.
Thank you. That improves my understanding considerably.
Thanks, Javier. Let's go back to Yoni and then Gonzalo and then Dennis. And by then, I think it'll be 2:15 and time to close up shop.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, thank you, Peter. I wanted to say about this, and both for the reasonings and for the transparency, this is a process, this isn't a project, so we are trying to improve all the time, and we definitely need your help as well here, and everybody else's, to make sure that we can do the right steps. Thank you for the proposals of how to improve the transparency and the understanding of the decisions that we make. I think that those are something that we should discuss in the board as well. But I think that even more important is that what was said already before, what we have done, a conscientious decision, and what we've tried to do is to move all the policy work, or as much as we can, to the SOs. And where we don't do those policy decisions that we have to explain. We've had the first, or maybe we have a couple of others as well, but one of the kind of recent ones was really the vertical integration work that which we directly put to the GNSO vertical integration working group. And that is a good example of that. And that is, I think, much more important than looking at that how we describe our decisions, but put the work in the actual to the bottom-up process.
Thanks. Gonzalo.
Thank you, Peter. Well, we have here interesting issues and details and opinions. I think that we have a standard here. We are moving forward. And there is for sure room for improvements about the standard that we are taking and facing.
It's not the same standard that we used to have 5 years ago. It's not the same standard. We don't have the same tools that we used to have. We didn't have 10 years ago or 5 years ago or 2 years ago. The documentation is so much complete and understandable in so many languages. And, well, the idea that was proposed or explained by Fabio about the European Commission is a really, really good one. But I think that I'm not quite sure if that policy is applicable to every and each policy making process within the Commission. That's a question, and I'm for sure that that discipline or policy is really not applicable to the telecommunications sector. I'm not sure. I used to work in a regulator in the telecommunications sector, and I was really involved during the last 10 years, and I don't recall a similar process in a telecommunications regulator. I mean, in terms of public policies. But for sure, it's a really good idea. Thank you.
Thanks, Ghazali. And Dennis, a brief comment.
I'm not sure that the European Commission is the standard that I was searching for, because I think many more people complain about the European Commission than complain about ICANN. But maybe it is the standard. Now, the point I want to make is that, to be positive, this whole review is part of our affirmation of commitments, our ICANN's affirmation of commitments, our commitment to do certain things, to improve, to be held to a standard, to be measured, and to have that reviewed. So I think the best thing that we can do is to try and take all these inputs, to try and frame a standard against which we'd be measured, and to work to achieve that standard. Thank you.
I was going to close, if I may, by just saying I think Brian's question, and I think partly Fabio's response, indicate an absolutely fundamental first requirement, and that is to understand how different the multi-stakeholder model is from previous models. The question as to why we don't publish a decision like the FCC is because we are set up totally differently from the FCC. That implies that the GNSO is in fact a place, a forum for people to come and present a case to the board. And the board is going to review that case and issue a decision on the merits of those protagonists in front of it, which is a complete misunderstanding of the fantastically different and exciting concept of the multi-stakeholder model. First of all, it would mean if we did it that we'd have to wait 3 to 6 to 18 months to write a judgment, as often happens in judicial systems. What we've got instead in ICANN, in the multi-stakeholder model, is we've got customers and their suppliers in the same room arguing with each other and making the policy. The board's job is not to make that policy, and this is what Mike and Dennis have been saying. And we do not make a decision on the merits of the policy as put to us by warring competitors who are entitled to have a decision from us as to why their position has been rejected. You've got to understand that that is not the process that goes on in ICANN. You cannot require ICANN to live up to the standards of the FCC in making decisions from a process that doesn't look like that. What the board's job is to do is to look at the GNSO as it's making its policy and check that it's resourced, that it's considered everything properly, that it's done the job of the GNSO. Our decisions, therefore, are largely, yes, that policy process has been done properly, and the outcome that those people fighting among themselves as the interested parties have reached is the correct decision. It's not our decision as to what to do. And as often as we can, and we've said this frequently, and we've used the example of vertical integration, when a policy decision comes to the board that might require us to make a written decision, we are sending it back. We are an oversight board. The mechanism of ICANN is not a replication of the European Commission. It's not a replication of the FCC. It is a brand new construct. It needs brand new standards, and it needs brand new understandings. So let's just get that clear, if we can, about looking around for comparators. You've got to understand what the essential ingredient of the ICANN decision-making process is. Thanks very much. Okay. Thank you to the Accountability and Review team. We have learned a lot from answering your questions, and I think some of the questions have provoked some solutions already in many people's minds. It is as it's intended to be, a constructive process. Please, board members, join with me in thanking members of the review team. Manal, would you like the last word?
Thank you, Peter. We also thank all the board for the time and for this fruitful interaction, and we hope to keep on the communication till we can deliver something that's really for the benefit of the ICANN as a whole and for the community as well. Thank you.